You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Welcome to the New Churches Podcast. I'm Ed Stetzer, and I have the privilege of having some guests today I'm going to introduce you in just a moment. But one of the frequent questions we discuss here on the podcast is issues of bivocational, co-vocational. Just so you know, so you're keeping up with the lingo in the church planning world. It's kind of evolved in the last few years where people use the term bivocational, you know, two jobs, to co-vocational because they're kind of connected between the two. Either way, people who are bivocational or co-vocational are just amazing heroes. It happens, pastors who are bivocational is much more common than most of you think. There's significant number of bivo-covo pastors who listen to the podcast, but a whole lot of you are vocational ministry, and praise God for that. But some denominations, it's half of the pastors are bivocational. So it's a very, very common experience. So we're going to talk today about church planter-friendly occupations, because there are different things that you have to take into mind and consider as you think about how to plant churches while having another job. Full disclosure, I've planted my last two churches while working in another job. I don't put myself in that category because my last two churches planted were while I was working at an organization called Lifeway, and before that, an organization called the North American Mission Board. And in both those cases, I have a different kind of role. So we're talking about people who are running a mail route. I'll use an example a little later of a guy who's running a trash route as well, and we'll talk about some of those. But enough about this introduction. I want you to have, we're going to bring in my guests. So we have two guests today. And, you know, the way we do the podcast, it's not like I'm not interviewing them like I do on my radio show. We're having a conversation. And we're having a conversation here among friends. Tiffany Smith is a friend of many, many years. She's a regional equipper with the Send Network, has a doctorate in leadership, missional leadership, DMIN. She writes over at missionalmayhem.com, big heart for developing the next generation of leaders, living a missional lifestyle, and been involved in key church planning leadership for decades. Clint Clifton's founding pastor of Pillar. It's a family of churches in military communities. Got a real passion to reach, engage Marines for the gospel and more. And he directs resource strategy as well at the North American Mission Board. So let me tell you too about a course we're offering on newchurches.com. It's on bivocational ministry, totally free. One of the things we love with our partnership with the Send Network is now all the resources are free. And you can see it there. Any interest in learning more about bivocational, co-vocational, you should take this course. Hugh Halter, Joe Seymour, Scott McConnell, and Ned Stetzer. Hey, that's me. We're all a part of that course as well. Okay, so let's jump into our conversation. And I want to start with you, Tiffany, because you have worked a lot with engaging, training, helping churches to engage and train in church planning. It seems that there is, in many, many cases, a kind of a assumption, a bias toward that the best church planting is the fully funded church planting. I know we've talked about this before. That's not necessarily something we think. It's not something statistically you can make. Are we making any progress to people to see the value of Bivo and Covo as a church planting option, or is it still an uphill battle?
I'm seeing some progress, but definitely it's still new to a lot of people to think in that way. It is very, very common to think of co-vocational or bivocational as plan B. Okay, so I'm going to do this until I can get fully funded. But it would be amazing to see, you know, as we've talked about, as Brad Briscoe has written about, and we've got so many resources on co-vocational, to see that shift in the church, because I think we'll see more momentum in the marketplace and into places that we can't reach, that the church normally isn't present. So there is some movement, but I think we have a lot of room to grow.
Yeah. And I want to bring in Clint, and then we're going to, again, we're moved more of a conversation mode here, but Clint, you're engaging. I mean, one of the things you do that I think is so fascinating is you're engaging through the Pillar Network, these often Marines, military and more, but also too with your broad observation of churches and ministry. How are you seeing, again, I want to affirm something that Tiffany said, because we think it's good that for some people they're working bivocationally, co-vocationally, and then eventually becoming vocational ministry. We're for that. And we'll talk about that. But how are you seeing people accept, acknowledge, and be enthusiastic about people who are remaining in a co-vocational role? Do you see that? What's that look like? Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about that. And then we're just going to throw around a conversation and go from there.
I think one of the things that I've noticed is that it was a talking point for years. It has been a talking point for years for bivocational pastors to be the heroes. We've talked about that a lot, but now we're actually seeing stories of bivocational pastors or co-vocational pastors that are really deeply entrenched in their career. They're great at what they do, and they're also being fruitful pastors and church planters. So I think, you know, 5-6 years ago, I didn't have a lot of examples to point to. Now I feel like we do have a lot of examples to point to, and that's really exciting. Ed, when you think about this, are there certain vocations that come to mind as really good fits for bivocational work?
Yeah, sure. The first time I think that I heard or read somebody talk about that was in a book by Steve Shogren, Creating Communities of Kindness, a while ago. It's the first time I saw a list, and it was really, I think Daniel M and I quoted it in the Planning Missional Churches book. And he had a really big categorical thing that's helpful. I mean, he had a list, like a school teacher is a good job to do that. His was not on the list, but I just know one wonderfully co-vocational pastor who's runs a garbage route and starts early in the morning, engages from there. But what his distinction was that church planning is to some degree an entrepreneurial activity. And if your job is super entrepreneurial, and your church planning is an entrepreneurial activity, that was the kind of, he said, that's not a good thing. So in other words, if I'm in sales, where basically my hustle is going to determine the success, not saying that these other jobs aren't hardworking, but jobs that have start times and end times, jobs that you invest and bring your best in the time that's there, seem to be. So he listed some things. I mentioned a teacher, working as a postal carrier, I mentioned earlier. Yeah. You know, those seem to be things that make the bigger difference.
Okay. Well, I have a question about kind of the New Testament precedent.
Yeah.
So I heard Hugh Halter talking about 1 Timothy 5:17, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. So he was basically saying, making the case that bivocational ministry was so normal in the early church that the believers were encouraged to give an extra blessing to those who were pulling double duty. So kind of give me your thoughts about the New Testament precedent of bivocovo pastors. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I do think there are New Testament examples of this for sure. I mean, we even think of the Apostle Paul. We know his occupation. His occupation is a tent maker. And I think of other New Testament characters. It was normal for them to be finding ways to earn money, whether that be through support of work or raising money from other churches. There was a New Testament precedent for gathering resources like that.
Yeah, it appears that vocational ministry is something that was worthy of mention. Brad, your quote of Brad, I think, gets at that. Paul seems to make a point of the saying, you know, I've been both. So there seemed to be, you know, and yet, you know, those who work for the gospel, you make their living by the gospel, we do see both. I think the difference is, so I don't think Brad was saying this, but I wouldn't say that it's not there. What he's saying is it was normal in the early church. And I think that we can see that. We also can see that historically. I mean, we can see that in, by the time we get to the late first, early second century, we have documents like the Didache, the Shepherd of Hermas, and others that sort of point to some different kinds of roles. I do think that article, or Hughes writing on the cell phone. So is Brad Briscoe. Brad wrote an article a few weeks ago on the benefits of avocationalism on newchurches.com. So one of the benefits he highlighted, Tiffany, I want you to comment on this. One of the benefits that he highlighted is missional engagement, because that's been a passion for you. Mm-hmm. He explains perhaps the most significant benefit of planting as a bivocational leader, that it gives the planter greater opportunities to connect relationally with people in the community. What ways have you seen bivocational pastors more naturally engage their community, Tiffany?
Some of my favorites are just the planter seeing a need in the community that's genuine and real, and then creating a business or moving into that segment to meet the need naturally and connecting to the community. So some examples, there's a guy in Oregon who started a fitness center and he's planting a church out of that. Obviously we've heard the stories about coffee shops. One of my favorites
is the coffee shop is almost cliche, the coffee shop, but I think it works. Yeah.
Well, we love coffee. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I don't, but language. The rest of you seem to. Yeah.
Yes. So one of my favorites right now is my favorite stories, and it's still kind of unfolding. These two guys who are brothers, they're in the San Francisco Bay Area, and one is a biological engineer. And he works on genetic stuff that I don't even have the ability to speak about. I can't even understand the terminology, but that is his vocation. And then he's planting a church with his brother, who's a musician. So that works out great for the worship part. And so they're planting a church here, but they're also online planting a church back in Hyderabad. So it's kind of a cool story. And I just love to see the creativity that we have in connecting to the community and then connecting to, like, in the biological engineer space, he's getting into a place of business, connecting to people that the church would not have access to, that group of people in a typical way. So it's just kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Helpful. And I would say too, the part of what we want to talk about is how do you do such a thing? Because church planners are generally entrepreneurial. I think Sjogren's concern and my concern is that if I'm entrepreneurial and five projects at a time, it does get a little harder, but there is a natural connection. So what the examples that Tiffany just gave, I think, are super helpful, because we look at the doing these things together. So if you're running a postal route and then you're planning a church, that's kind of, okay, I get there's two separate realms. But if you're starting a CrossFit gym, that's also a church, that's got a whole different feel to us. Give us more on that, Clint.
Yeah, I think you're onto something here. There's certain entrepreneurial ventures that I think are really given to being great missiologically. You mentioned CrossFit. Yeah, I think the fitness realm is a great one because you're doing so much interaction. I know hairstyling is becoming more of a thing in the missional space, mobile barber trucks and things like that. I know several church planners that are doing that. A relatively low bar for entry in terms of education and stuff like that. And lots of engagement with people. You have a captive audience. Mm-hmm. So there are missiological advantages to certain careers. And I think if somebody's on the front end listening to this conversation and they're thinking about how am I going to engage in bivocational, co-vocational ministry in the future, they might actually choose a career that's given to that kind of work.
That's good. And I think, Tiffany, that's sort of, I mean, social entrepreneurship is kind of what you were pointing us to, where people are engaging in, I think a more formal definition is that a startup is directly addressing issues of concern. Mm-hmm. And so here it might be meeting needs. And it doesn't just have to be ministering, though it could be ministering to the poor, but meeting a need related to something else then leads into that. And that just creates a lot. Part of the challenges is that some entrepreneurial stuff, let's say I've got a friend, somebody's a God church planner who runs a Facebook ad company as his bivocational ministry and then plants bivocationally. So his Facebook ad company doesn't have him any interaction with other humans. Well, I mean, there are people who are buying Facebook ads, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that double blessing, if you will, of engaging in social concern gives you an opportunity to build those missional relationships as well. Mm-hmm. How's that play out, Tiffany?
Well, I want to go back. You used a phrase that I kind of want you to unpack.
Okay.
What, you used the phrase social entrepreneurship.
Right.
So
right.
Can you unpack that for
us? So that's a thing. And let me read the U.S. Chamber of Commerce definition. It says social entrepreneurship is the process by which individual startups and entrepreneurs develop and fund solutions that directly address social issues. A social entrepreneur, therefore, is a person who explores business opportunities that have a positive impact on their community, in society, or the world. And I think that one of the people that I saw do this early on, he would later go a very different direction, but was a church planner in Atlanta. And he would start these hope campaigns, these ministry campaigns, these opportunity to address. And he'd invite the community, often using social media, he'd invite the community to come join him and let's impact this issue. Mm-hmm. And in the process of impacting this issue, they actually got in some relationships. Not everyone. I mean, there are people just impacting the issue, but other people got in relationships and ended up even being part of the church plant and more. So I think that's, you know, and I think the tricky part is that we think in terms of like, if you're co-vocational, bivocational, there are two spheres. You know, back to my friend who does, Jeremy's his name, who does Facebook ads. And is a church planner. He's working in one world, working in the other world. When you work bivocationally, co-vocationally, using a social entrepreneurial model, you actually end up not as two closed hands, but as two hands that are actually often working together. Though you have to be careful because you want to be a person of integrity. You really should be caring about the issue you're impacting. I think, you know, again, I'm not starting any CrossFit gyms, I assure you. But if that's something you're passionate about, that could be a perfect example. So you're not planting a church using social entrepreneurship as a tool. You're both where you could do that. I mean, it could be, I'm going to work 3 years at Starbucks as a tool so I can plant this church. But your social entrepreneurship probably means you care about this issue as maybe people's health, if we use the CrossFit example, as well. I think that's a key distinction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I was even thinking a little outside the box too. I think that there's some natural places that we would go in our thoughts and our strategies. We're thinking about meeting community needs, but right now our culture is so thirsty. There's just a vacuum in the relational connections. Obviously post COVID, but you know, our high tech. So I was reading some business articles recently about businesses recognizing this vacuum and stepping into this space to give the highest quality customer service ever. And I was just listening, thinking, God, that's what the church should do. We should be the salt and light in this relational vacuum. So no matter what business that we have or what creative way we end up connecting in the community to give that highest relational salt and light and fruit of the spirit that we can, to kind of splashing a little Holy Spirit onto people.
I love that. It is impact by relational context as well. Clint, maybe any final comments from you? I'm going to ask a question and we'll wrap up the episode. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things I'm thinking about as you guys are talking is social entrepreneurship is often a big national addressing of a big issue, you know, but sometimes it's local. And more often, I think it's helpful for a church planner if they're solving local problems in a local place and they can find a way to rally the community around that local problem in the local place. And that way, the church planting work and the social entrepreneurship are, you know, interacting with the same group of people and provide new missional opportunities.
Love it. Tiffany, last question for you. You are particularly focused on helping next gen leaders leverage their careers for mission. What opportunities do you see for next generation missionaries and church planners?
I'll just pick up on something that you mentioned earlier, just that intentionality going into a career or a vocation with the idea of how can I use this for God's glory? And I would say, you know, as a strategist, I tend to lean on my own skill and strategy and thinking and planning. And so I would just also encourage, you know, as we're thinking about this, invite the Holy Spirit to say, hey, show me a creative way to step into my vocation, step into my passion, to maximize the gospel and the kingdom movement. So I think I would love to see the church unleashed. And I think if we make the shift between the leader-laity divide, where everybody sees themselves on mission, not just the lead church planter, not just the core team, but everybody is engaged and sent and released into the world to be salt and light, then we're going to see more movement. We're going to see discipleship at a deeper, richer level that we just haven't seen before.
Good theological, missiological ending for our conversation. Couple of resources that I want to recommend to you. One is by my former co-host on the New Churches podcast. It's called You Are What You Do and Six Other Lies About Work, Life, and Love. It actually deals a lot with the gig economy, which opens up all kinds of new doors for bivocational church planning. And so check out that resource as well. Also, a free book. If you're interested in learning more about co-vocational church planning, you should click the link in the show notes from today's episode. Receive a copy of Brad Briscoe's excellent book, Co-Vocational Church Planning, a gift from our friends at the Send Network. Thank you for listening. Thanks for my guests, Clint and Tiffany as well. If you wouldn't mind, like and share this podcast wherever you download your favorite podcast to get more words out about the free resources that are here at the newchurches.com podcast and newchurches.com as well. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.